So this is an interesting, I think, topic. It's Sfiras Omer. During Sfiras Omer, it's a time where we're supposed to work on specifically our beidam lachavero, our behavior towards each other, and one way of trying to do that is try to reflect and try to sort of be inspired by perhaps stories of trying to people who really worked in the Beit HaMelech on interpersonal relationships. After all, this the Gemara says the students Rabbi Akiva died because they didn't lo nahagu kavod zeh lazeh, they didn't treat each other with respect. So we have to work on that. I think one way to is that this is an interesting way of working on our Beit HaMelech Havero, is that we're going to go through dilemmas that I was emailed. Dina sent me a whole bunch of dilemmas, and they are very challenging dilemmas. And I'm going to try to provide an approach for each of these dilemmas in the hopes that we'll use this as a way to further our sensitivity in terms of dealing with each other, in terms of many of these issues that could come up. We're trying to balance perhaps taking care of ourselves and taking care of other people. Where do you draw the line? If you're stuck between sometimes the lesser of two evils, which is the lesser of two evils? So again, these are, I think, 13 questions that we went through. And obviously, you can speak up. If there's a new ethical dilemma that you may have, I may not have researched it enough that I can provide a definitive view. Some of the questions that were given to me, I thought pretty straightforward what the answer should be. Some of them I had to research a bit. So you should feel free to come up, and if you have other questions, I may or may not be able to answer them. Anyway, let's go right into it. So the first question is, if you're in the grocery store and you see a firm friend or acquaintance buying something that you think isn't kosher, do you tell them? Okay, so it's obviously a very uncomfortable situation. So there is a mitzvah of tochacha. There is a mitzvah, the Torah says in Parshas Kedoshim, Hochiach tochiach es habisecha, you're supposed to rebuke your friend. And that the Gemara there in Erechin says that if you see someone engaging in some inappropriate behavior, in a davar meguneh, in a bad behavior, then you're supposed to try to, again, I don't mean rebuke them, give them harsh mussar, embarrass them. In fact, the pasuk says lo sisa lo chait, that you're not supposed to try to, you shouldn't embarrass someone when you are telling them what to do. But there is a Torah obligation that we have a responsibility, not just for ourselves, that we should engage in good behavior, that we should try to influence people around us. And it's fascinating that there are at least six Gemaras which discuss the parameters of the obligation to rebuke other people. And it's very fascinating because three of the Gemaras seem to indicate that you absolutely should always try as hard as you can to rebuke people. For example, there's a Gemara which says that if you have the ability to protest and you don't protest, you are held responsible for the person's sins. If you could effectively, rebuke someone and you don't, so it's not only that person's sins, but you're held responsible. There's another Gemara which in Shabbos which tells a story of how one rabbi told another rabbi to rebuke someone, and the second rabbi said to the first rabbi, well, they're not going to listen, and the first rabbi says, I don't care, rebuke them anyway. And there's a third Gemara which seems to say that you should rebuke someone in this Gemara in Erechin until the person is about to get angry or curse you out or hit you. So there are three Gemaras which seem to indicate that you always should rebuke someone until, like, really strongly. Again, it doesn't mean you have to make them feel bad, but you have to try to convince them to do good, and if they're not doing something that's correct. On the other hand, there are other Gemaras. There's a Gemara in Yevamos which says just like there's a mitzvah to say something that will be heard, there's also a mitzvah not to say something that won't be heard, because you're just going to cause fighting, and the person's not going to listen to you. Then what are you doing? You're just simply causing machlokas. There's another Gemara which says nobody knows how to accept rebuke nowadays, and nobody knows how to give rebuke nowadays. And there's another Gemara which says that if you see people sitting unintentionally, you know what? Better let them sit unintentionally. Because if someone's sitting unintentionally, they don't know something's wrong, and then you tell them, but they don't listen to you, then now they're sitting intentionally. So it's better that they sit unintentionally. So they're like some Gemaras which indicate you should rebuke, some Gemaras that indicate you should not rebuke, and all the Rishonim try to discuss, try to put these Gemaras together. So how do we come out? So the Rama in Or Chaim Siman Tafresh Ches Seif Beis says the following. Says that basically, and so number one is that if you, let's say, first of all, you have to know the food's definitely not kosher. So let's assume you know for sure the food is not kosher. Okay, there could be different stringencies. Let's say you know for sure the food's not kosher. And if you know that they definitely won't listen to you, like you have no relationship with them, or they're not the kind of personality, obviously we don't know 100%, but if you basically know they're not going to listen to you, then it's better not to say anything, because then better that they sin unintentionally rather than they sin intentionally. If you believe that they might listen to you, then the Rama writes that you should say something. And the Mishnah Berurah points this out as well. So the distinction that's made in terms of you see someone doing something wrong, if you know they won't listen, and they're sinning unintentionally, again, we're assuming that this food is definitely not kosher. Sometimes you follow a certain stringency. So we're talking about something where you know something's definitely not kosher. And then, so it would depend. If you know they're not going to listen, right, then you shouldn't say anything. If you think there's a chance they might listen to you, then you really should say something. I know it's uncomfortable. Then it's a question how you say it. The most effective way of confronting someone is just being curious and not coming across as judgmental. So again, the goal is you don't want to make them feel like a bad person, but to sort of, be curious, say, I think that that hashgacha is not a valid hashgacha. I would want someone to tell me that. If I would want to know. Some people may not want to know. Some people might want to know. I'd want to know if I think that a certain hashgacha is good, or that maybe I made a mistake. I'd want someone to tell me. So that's how we listen. It's always easy not to say anything. On the flip side, you can actually, help someone out if you really believe that they're supposed to follow halacha and you want to help someone follow halacha. So if you think they might listen, so then again, you can say in a way that doesn't. The key is not to be judgmental. I heard that, listen, I want to let you know. Again, I don't know if you say, I don't know for sure, but I want to let you know that I heard that, you can say, Rabbi Muskett mentioned to me at some point that this hashgacha is not a valid hashgacha. You may have heard from elsewhere, but I want to let you know that's what I heard. So again, try to do it in a way where you're not making them feel guilty, just something that you heard. So that's sort of addressing the first, first question. Okay? Any clarifications on the first question? Okay. Next question. If you are one of two or three Jews in an office or a group, and you all have different religious levels, how do you navigate that without making someone else look bad? Like if the other person publicly eats food from a restaurant that I don't eat in, then they order it for the group and I have no easy way out. So again, I don't think this is not pure halacha. I think that people understand that different people have different standards nowadays. And I don't think we should be embarrassed about our standards. We should just say that we have different standards without being judgmental. The key always, I feel, is that people are always afraid that if you tell them you have a different standard, then you are judging them. So the most important thing in terms of dealing with people in this regard is just to sort of say, this is, you hold like this, I hold like that. I have a different standard than you. If, of course, you're in the office and the food is truly non-kosher, so then we go back to question number one. Do you have to inform the other people? So that depends on the facts and the answer to the previous question. You should know that if someone is completely non-observant, so the Torah says, Hochiach tochiach es amisecha. So they have to be someone who is your part of your nation, your halachic nation. So obviously, whether someone is a Orthodox Jew, conservative Jew, Reformed Jew, unaffiliated Jew, they are part of Klal Yisrael, they're part of the Jewish people. But from a perspective of tochacha, a perspective of rebuking, if the Ber Halacha, that's the Mishnah Berurah, he writes that if someone is a publicly violate Shabbos, so he does not count as being Amisecha, part of your halachic Am. Again, they're fully Jewish, but they're not part of your halachic responsibility to give tochacha, and that makes sense because the person's if they're publicly violating Shabbos, then all you're going to do is you're going to make them hate Judaism more. Again, it's a nice thing to try to be makar with people, but the real mitzvah of tochacha is to keep on trying to push them. You got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it until the person's about to get angry at you. So you don't have to do that. You're not obligated if the person's is not is a publicly violate Shabbos, for example. So again, I don't think we should feel bad. We shouldn't feel embarrassed about our religious level. We should feel proud of it, but we should not be judgmental. That's always the challenge. We have to be passionate about our own views, but understand that different people have different backgrounds. Some people who, let's say, there's some people who are, let's say, are Bali Tshuva. Not all Bali Tshuva are like this at all. Some people who are so inspired, it's like a tremendous koach where people perhaps who have not been so observant, and now all of a sudden they're observant. Sometimes they can say, how come other people aren't observant? The answer is Baruch Hashem, someone who got inspired, or even people who are Orthodox, who brought up Orthodox, but they're inspired to take on a new mitzvah, a new observance. So they're nervous about how other people will look at them. I think the approach always is that everyone has to continue growing. And at the end of the day, we shouldn't be embarrassed about our religious level. We should be proud of it. But we shouldn't look down on other people. We should try to maybe excite other people, perhaps, about reaching higher levels of observance. But we shouldn't be judgmental. I think that's the key point. Okay. Question number three. If your friend asks you how she looks, and you say that her dress is unflattering, and you think that her dress is unflattering, well, then what are you supposed to say? And related to this, another question, I think it fits into this question. Can you lie to a friend to stop hurt feelings? Like saying, let's say that your friend was not invited to an event, and you tell her, I wasn't invited to this event either, and when really you were invited to this event. So this, of course, is the question of, are you allowed to distort the truth for the sake of peace? And so there's a Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samech Hayam and Beis, that says the following: Amar Rabbi Lo Mishum Rabbi Lazar Barav Shimon Muter Lo LaAdam Lishanos B'Davar Hashalom. So the first opinion of the Gemara is you're allowed to distort the truth, and the source is that when Yaakov Avinu died, so Yosef's brothers were nervous that Yosef was going to now take revenge on them. The only reason why Yosef didn't harm his brothers is that Yaakov was alive. The brothers were nervous that Yosef was going to harm them after Yaakov died. So the brothers lied, or they distorted the truth, and this is explicitly in the Torah. And the brothers basically said, they said to Yosef, our father told us before he died that Yosef, you shouldn't harm us. So the Gemara we see from here that you're allowed to distort the truth for the sake of peace. Rabbi Nassan says, and then the Gemara continues, it says, Rabbi Nassan, Omer mitzvah. Rabbi Nassan said, it's actually a mitzvah to lie, to distort the truth for the sake of peace. Why? So there's a story where Shmuel is sent by God to anoint David to be the king. And David, and Shmuel says, how could I go to anoint David to be the king? After all, when Shaul finds out, he will kill me. So God said, this is what you got to do. You got to take some cattle and say you're going to offer sacrifices. So here God commanded Shmuel to lie so that he wouldn't be harmed for the sake of peace. And then the final opinion in the Beis Medrash Rabbi Shmuel, it says, Gadol HaShalom, Shalom is so important, peace is so great, that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God distorted the truth for the sake of peace. When did this happen? This happened when Sarah said, when Sarah laughed in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, when she heard that she was going to have a child, she said, I can't believe that I'm going to have a child when my husband is so old. Adoniza came, my husband is 100 years old, 99 years old. I can't believe that we're going to have a child. And then when God sort of told Avram, repeated the story, he said that Sarah said that she was old and not that he was old. Because we see that God even distorted the truth for the sake of peace. So, and by the way, it's even, there's a comment by the Ritva, there's a famous Gemara also by Ksuvos, which actually says a debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to what are you supposed to do with a bride who is not so pretty. So Beis Shammai said, you're supposed to say, Kala Kamoshehi. That Kala, she is the way she is. So that's Beis Shammai. He's very into truth. And Beis Hillel says, no, you have to say Kala Noa V'Chasuda. You have to distort the truth for the sake of peace, to make the bride feel good. And the Ritva writes, In fact, it's not considered sheker. It's not considered sheker. Because what is MS and sheker? MS is something that reflects the will of Hashem. Shek, which is truth. The truth reflects the will of Hashem. Sheker is something which does not reflect the will of Hashem. So usually, telling the facts as they are reflects the will of Hashem. But sometimes, distorting the facts is MS, because that reflects the will of Hashem. So it's not even, you're not lying for the sake of peace. That is MS. It is MS to sometimes distort the facts for the sake of peace. So I would say that if telling her that the dress is unflattering, and that will make her feel bad, and right, so then I would say, and it will serve no real purpose, then I would say that you may say the dress looks beautiful. Right? In general, right? If, for example, you're telling her that because you don't want her to buy the dress, or you feel that she's going to embarrass herself, let's say wear that dress, it looks hideous, and you know for sure she's going to embarrass herself, then it might be appropriate to tell her the truth. Just want to make a general point about, you know, distorting the truth for the sake of peace. So it's important that when we are permitted to distort the truth for the sake of peace, we should try to avoid it when at all possible. In other words, this is a comment by the Orchot Tzadikim Sharchov Beis, where he writes that let's say they ask you, do you know this Masechta of Gemara? And you don't want to make it seem like, oh, look at me, I'm so arrogant. Look at me, I know so much Gemara. So instead of saying, no, I don't know the Gemara, because you don't want to make yourself seem so arrogant, you can sort of say, well, you really think I know it? Now, it's good to try to train yourself not to explicitly speak in untruths, because we want to train ourselves. Sometimes we're forced to say things that don't represent the truth. We want to try to avoid it when at all possible. By the way, that's probably Rashi's comment. You know, when in the story of the Brachos, when Yitzchak tells Yaakov, "Who are you?" and Yaakov says, "Anochi Esav Bechorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn." So Rashi says that Yaakov really was meaning to say, "Anochi Esav, I am Esav." I'm sorry, "Anochi Yaakov, I am Yaakov, and Esav is your firstborn." It's not what he said. The Torah says, "Anochi Esav Bechorecha." So what Rashi's trying to do is he said that Yaakov said it in a way that maybe you could couch it as being truthful. Again, it wasn't. He was distorting the truth because Rivka told him to, and that was fine. But even when you have to lie, you try to avoid it all possible. A second thing that's important is that you shouldn't put yourself in a situation where you will constantly be forced to lie. Let's say you have a job. The Yamshel Shlomo has a comment where he says that this is in Yavamos Perek Vav, I think it's Simon Mem Vav, where he says, let's say you have you're somehow in between father and mother, and you're negotiating between your father and your mother about something, and you constantly have to lie to each other for the sake of peace. That's your constant job. You should avoid that. So in other words, you don't want to train yourself to be someone who is constantly lying. If once in a while you need to distort the truth for the sake of peace, that's fine. But we don't want to train ourselves to constantly not tell the truth. And finally, the Gemara and Sukkah, Daf Mem Vav and Beis, tells us that you shouldn't tell a child, you shouldn't lie in front of a child, because because then the child, a young child, cannot often make the distinction between permitted lies and non-permitted lies. So it's very important in front of young children that if we're forced to perhaps distort the truth under certain circumstances, it should not be in front of young children until they have mastered the practice of always telling the truth. So once they have it in their head, so then you can say there's an exception here and there. And I would say, can you lie to a friend to stop hurt feelings? I would say the same thing. You know, you can lie to a friend so her feelings won't be hurt. Again, if somehow you tell her you weren't invited to the event and then later on she finds out that it's easy for her to catch you on your lie, obviously it doesn't help. But again, I would say you would be allowed to distort the truth for the sake of peace here. Okay? So,
Rabbi?
Yes.
So for that example about the friend and the inviting, she's already hurt because she wasn't invited.
Right.
So she's asking you to find out, like, if you can commiserate with her in hurtness. If, like, kind of like you can be mad together.
Right.
But is that really for peace then if you say, no, I wasn't? Because it kind of is anti-peace by, like, she's going to want to say, you know, oh, can't believe we both weren't invited.
Oh, no. So I don't think so. No. So if the goal is to vent and to cause machlokis against someone, I don't think that that's necessarily so helpful. You can sort of validate.
Even if it's just to make her feel better that she's not the only one who's not invited.
So that's something different. So those are two different things. They're two different things. One thing is to make herself feel that she's not the only one who wasn't invited. Try to find a silver lining in that. And the other thing is that if she is upset at that person, you can, it's certainly okay to validate her feelings and say, you know what, it's natural for you to feel that way. But try to put it, but then first you validate it, then you put it in perspective. In other words, the goal is try to validate her feelings that she is upset and, you know, and it's normal to be upset. But once you validate it, try to put her in the best possible light. If the goal is to get her to stew and to hate the person, so I don't think to really want to get back at the person. So if not, I'm saying, in other words, it's important to validate her feelings of being hurt. It's probably, you know, that, you know, it's it makes sense. If someone feels hurt, you want to validate that, but we want the end game is to try to, what's the end game? The end game is to say, okay, she may have done something wrong. Let's try to not blow it out of proportion, but you can't do that unless she feels that you're on her side and that you understand how she's feeling. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay. So is there any time when one person, if there are any psychologists here in the audience, if you have better suggestions than me, feel free to, make suggestions. Is there any time when one person can ignore another person they don't like? Is it the right thing to always be nice? How do you handle a situation when a family member or friend is not nice? What if someone is disrespecting your level of observance and actions? These are a bunch of questions. I think they all fit together. What is the ethical Jewish way to act if there's a person or people who choose to be intentionally rude to you via behavior actions, i.e., is it okay to ignore them back? Or must you be the bigger person, always be nice and a model Jew when you see them? Is there ever a time to confront someone? Wow. Okay. So this is also found in Parshas Kedoshim. Let's start at the beginning. The Rambam points out in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Beis Lachates that Tshuva doesn't help someone, let's say in Yom Kippur, until they not only do they have to apologize to God, they have to apologize to the person. And the Rambam in Hilchos Chovel Mazik Perek Hei Halacha Yud says that you're considered a cruel person if the person apologizes and sincerely apologizes. So then he says it's like a cruel thing to generally, you know, not forgive the person. And again, I think he's saying that in general circumstances. Now, obviously, there are certain types of, let me be very clear about this, there are certain types of behaviors that, you know, they're so extreme. You know, God forbid someone, you know, tries to kill someone, or, you know, you can't say you can always forgive someone. That's always human and natural to forgive someone who sincerely apologizes. If someone sincerely apologizes under most circumstances, then I think it's appropriate to forgive the person. I think one is supposed to forgive the person according to the Rambam. Again, I would say that if someone does something bad to you and then they have sincerely apologized, and then they do it again and they sincerely apologize, So that's not really a sincere apology. Because a sincere apology means that they want to reconcile. You can't really reconcile with that person if they don't want to, you know, they're just saying they sincere apology, but their actions don't back up their words, or maybe they can't. Could be. So if they sincerely apologize, then I think it's appropriate to forgive them. If she doesn't apologize, this gets a little tricky, because in Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah says, "Lo sisnas lochicha b'vavecha." Don't hate someone in your heart. Hochiach tochicha samisecha. You should rebuke someone. V'lo sisa lochait, and don't bear a sin because of them. Lo sikom v'lo sitor. Don't take revenge. Don't hold a grudge. And so the way the Ramban understands this is that he said that the Torah is telling us a story. And what's the story? Some person was mean to you. And so what's the halacha? The halacha is, if someone's mean to you, don't hate them in your heart. Rather, confront them. Don't hold it inside of you. You hold it inside of you. First of all, it's not always so psychologically helpful to hold inside of you. You're not allowed to hold it inside and you hate the person in your heart. You're supposed to confront the person and say, you know, why'd you do this? Sometimes, by the way, it's a misunderstanding, right? Very often there are misunderstandings. And the person totally didn't realize what they were doing. And the person very often will apologize to you. And then instead of this having this, you know, anger built up, you approach the person and the person, you know, says they're sorry. And then things are good. And then you don't take revenge. You don't hold a grudge. Obviously, there's a way to confront the person. If you confront the person, and again, this is more of a communication exercise. If you confront the person by describing them, why were you so mean? So you're already putting them on the defensive. Is this more of a what you would do is describe what happened and how you felt, without so much emotion, and see if they get it. Because if at the end of the day, the goal is reconciliation. In other words, you might argue, well, that's not fair because I'm the victim and now I have to, you know, I'm the victim and I have to now be the better, I have to confront them. Like, that's not fair. So the answer is that, yeah, it's a high level, it's a high standard, but we as B'nai Torah, that we have responsibility to try to seek peace in easy circumstances and in difficult circumstances. We have an obligation to seek peace in easy, and even when we've been hurt, we should try to seek peace. So again, doesn't mean we forgive the person at this stage. It means that we confront them and we say, you know, you realize that when we were together, when we had Shabbos meal together, you know that you said that, you said this. Don't say you were mean, because then you're already putting it on the defensive. So just describe the facts. And again, you're curious. So then that will create the best opportunity for the person to say, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize. You say, listen, you know, when we were at the Shabbos table, you said A, B, C, D, and E, and this is the way I interpreted it. I'm curious what your thoughts were about that. And so that way, that provides the best opportunity. Again, you're not doing it in an angry, aggressive way. Again, you do it in an angry, aggressive way, and again, this is much easier said than done. This is what I believe is the most effective way to try to bring about peace. Because if you come across as very aggressive, again, you're the victim. Say, why should I have to do anything? So again, I'm telling you, ideally, if we want to work on ourselves, then it's not easy, I'm telling you. But we want to work on ourselves, so our job is to try to seek peace, even under difficult circumstances, even when someone does something bad for us. So the Torah says that we approach them. I'm curious why you did this, and hopefully they're going to apologize. What if they don't apologize? What if they don't apologize? So on the simple level, the Torah doesn't seem to obligate us to forgive them, or to reconcile with them if they don't sincerely apologize. Because I don't think the Torah expects you to be a doormat. So I don't think that the Torah, let you look in the Rambam, he says, if someone sincerely apologizes you, appeases you, so then you're obligated to forgive them. That being said, I once gave a Shabbos Shuva Drasha about this, and I pointed out that in Tefillah Zaka, we say that I forgive everyone, but there we're speaking to God. So we should try to emulate what the Gemara in a number of places says about how certain, like Rabbi Akiva was someone who was mavir al-midosav. He was someone who would wipe away the hurt. He wouldn't let things get to him. Some people are very sensitive. They get upset about everything and anything. Some people, not a big deal. Again, it doesn't mean you should be a doormat, but you know, there's some people who have a tendency that say, it's not a big deal. This person was probably angry when they did that. And obviously there's a balance between if you're really feeling abused and hurt, then you don't have to all of a sudden, you know, forgive the person. But to sort of say, you know what, there are people out there who aren't mentioned. There are people out there who don't act appropriately. So it's their issue. Thank God. Thank God I don't have their character flaws. Sometimes I say that. When someone is mean to me, I'm not, you know, I have my flaws too. But let's say someone is mean to me, and I know they're mean to me, and they're mean to other people as well. So I say, thank God I don't have their character flaw. And I try to say, this is their personality. Again, I'm not necessarily going to run to be friends with them and hang out with them all the time because I don't want to be subject to this. But try as best you can to try to be polite, but try to wipe away the hurt. Be mavir al midosav. The Magen Avraham says at the beginning of each day that we're supposed to be makabel on ourselves the mitzvah of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. He says this in the introduction to Simon Mem Vav. So again, what I would say is the following, that, listen, if you don't have to put yourself in a situation where you're constantly being abused, constantly being made fun of. I wouldn't put myself in that situation. I don't think you have to fully forgive someone to the point where you're best friends with someone, or you have, you're fully reconciled with them after they've been very mean to you, and they don't really make serious efforts to reconcile with you. I don't think that the halacha requires you to do that. Halacha requires you to try to make peace, to try to confront the person. Again, there's a way to do it also. Again, the way to do it is the goal not to say, I'm a victim, so you owe me. The way to do it is, I want to seek peace. Even though you're the victim, you want to seek peace. Make the other person aware of what they did was wrong and see if they apologize. And if at the end of the day, there are people who just, you're always feeling bad about yourself around them, you're always feeling abused around them. So try as best you can to wipe away the hurt, see that they have issues, and try to avoid them where all possible. Okay? It's a general approach. Okay? Obviously, there are extreme situations, that you have to take maybe harsher steps. But in general, that I think is the appropriate approach. Okay? Question number 5. May we discuss secrets friends tell us with our husbands? Is it lashon hara to talk to a friend about a situation you're having with someone else who they know without using names, but realizing that there's a small chance they may figure out who you're talking about? So to answer the second part first, the Chavetz Chaim in Lashon Hara, Klal Gimel Os Dalet, says, Isser Sipur Lashon Hara, the prohibition of telling Lashon Hara, is a filum enu mavar beis ha-sipur sa'ishu medabir olav, even if you don't explicitly state at the time when you're telling the Lashon Hara, the name of the person you're speaking about, raku misapir stam, you're just saying it. You're just saying in general, umitoch inyan asipor nishma la shomea al eze ish kivet amasapir hazeh. And by your telling the story, the person figures this out. So I don't know, the specific questions, if there's a small chance. Not sure if there's a small, if there's a really, if there's a reasonable chance, I don't know what the word small means, actually. If there's a reasonable chance that, if there's a reasonable chance that they're going to figure out who the person is, and you don't mention the person's name, It's as if you're mentioning the person's name. Okay? Now, can you tell your spouse about secrets? You're having an issue, you need to speak to someone about it. So first of all, what's interesting is some people think there's a heter to speak Lashon Hara to a family member. What's interesting, of course, is that when Miriam got Tzara'as in Parshas is it Baal Oscha, for telling Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, who was she speaking Lashon Hara to? Her brother, to Aaron. So Lashon Hara applies even to family members. That being said, telling Lashon Hara to a spouse or a close friend to receive advice or emotional support is constructive and is permitted if the person is seeking relief from anxiety. Lashon Hara is permitted if there's a constructive purpose and certain conditions are met. And again, if the goal is you're telling one person and because you need to, you're having tremendous anxiety, had a rough day with one particular person, and it's absolutely necessary because to relieve anxiety. So Rav Schachter is quoted to have a number of Sfarim. They quote him as saying that if someone's suffering from significant psychological anguish, she can speak freely to a therapist to seek relief from anxiety based on the verse Da'aga Balev Yisachena, that basically Yisachena. If someone is worried, they need to sometimes talk it out. and he thinks that a spouse can often serve as the most effective confidant. I spoke to, when I teach this to my students, so I sometimes tell them, you need to understand something. Sometimes it's better to speak to a friend, and sometimes it's better to speak to a parent or a teacher. So on the one hand, sometimes you don't feel comfortable telling this issue to a teacher and or to your parent. You may only feel comfortable speaking to your friend. At the same time, if you tell a friend, then they might tell a friend, they might tell a friend, they might tell a friend. Sometimes people feel the need to vent. And this is Javi, this is your issue, that your question that you raised about someone wasn't invited. They need to tell someone about it. So it is okay to tell one person about it. You know, and maybe if that one person isn't helpful, then maybe tell one other person about it. It's not okay to start telling a whole bunch of people about it. Again, if you're having, you know, anxiety and you need to talk it out with someone, it's okay to do that with one person. But again, it has to be very minimal. It has to be to the extent necessary. So I don't think more than one person. That's why I told my students, I said, again, sometimes you're right. It might be to tell a parent a certain secret or a certain thing that's bothering you. It might, you know, a friend might be sometimes a better person to speak to, but you need to understand that realistically, very often, you know, teenage friends, they might tell other people. Some adults also may reveal secrets to other people too, but I would hopefully, hopefully adults are a little more discreet than kids. But so that's what I would say. To talk to a spouse or to talk to some things you might want to tell a spouse, some things you may want to tell a good friend. But again, it has to be clear that not only is this friend someone who can be helpful to you, but it should also be clear this person, the person you're telling to, is not someone who tells other people secrets. Okay? That's very important. Okay. Next question. Yes.
When someone tells you a secret, and you feel that you're going to share it with your spouse, I think it's proper to ask the person, would you mind if I share this with my husband?
Oh, so, yes, okay. Yes, okay, I didn't read the question as you pointed out, Sandra. You're 100% correct. I may have not read the question. I was sort of focusing on the second part of the question where you're having a dip. Let's say, for example, you find out, I agree with you under most circumstances, you should ask someone. And I try to do that. It's actually interesting. Like as a rabbi, sometimes people tell me secrets and sometimes people are surprised that my wife, that Yael doesn't know. Because I try to ask people, and I try to know when I'm supposed to ask someone if I can tell Yael. But very often people like they ask, yeah, how come you didn't know? And there are times where people may have got offended that Yael didn't tell them something because I just didn't tell them. They assumed that I was going to tell her. No, most people don't get offended, but I'm saying that I try to say if someone is telling me something, and I would say, can I tell this to my wife to discuss? I was more focusing on if something's really bothering you. Let's say someone tells you a secret, right? And it could be, Sandra, that even if the person tells you, keep it to yourself, if it's something, and I can't give a definitive sock about this, but if it's something that really, like she says, don't tell anyone about this, but it's something that is really bothering you, she may not own that, you know, she may not necessarily be entitled to prevent you from telling someone else. I think it can be taken into account, but depending on what she says, if it's something that, let's say, could be hurtful, if she tells you a secret that said, don't tell anyone else this, but someone did this, is planning on doing this to you, someone did something to you or whatever the case is, and she says, don't tell anyone, but I'm just telling you this. And then now you're stuck with that information. I don't believe that you always need that person's permission. I think it's helpful to do that. But sometimes, based on information you have, you could be put in a bind because you don't know what to do with that information.
But Rabbi, also then about the husband thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like Rav Tigan was saying, that's how I interpreted that, you know, to be about the husband. Like, okay, what can you tell him? What if it's not going to cause you anguish? It's just you want to tell you want to tell somebody. Oh, I know this person's pregnant. Oh, I know.
I don't know. I don't know. So like, no. If you know someone's pregnant, yeah, we've had that a lot. Where I don't tell y'all anything. We find out. I find out. All the beautiful news, you know, right before Yom Kippur, I find all the people are pregnant, right? Because they always ask me the Shiloh. Those are things you have to ask. Because I don't know if they want that information disclosed. If they're telling you a secret.
Even to a husband. There's no special laws.
There are no laws about telling. No, there are no laws about telling husband things. There are no laws about telling husband things. No. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Can you discuss a friend's struggles in school? Can you share funny but slightly embarrassing things about them? Now, the halacha is that Chavetz Chaim Lashon Hara Klal Gimel Os Gimel says that he says that even afilu eino medaber mitoch hasina, even if you're not saying Lashon Hara based on hatred, v'lo niskavim basipa leganosa, your goal is not to like denigrate the person, but what rak amru derech schok b'derek kalos rol, you're saying by way of laughter or levity. And so he said it's still forbidden. Again, Lashon Hara applies even if it's a joke. Sometimes, though, I would say that if the joke is said not as an insult, and it's clear the person will not be hurt from the joke, then it probably would not be a violation of Lashon Hara. You know, the big question is, can you roast someone, right? Like these roasts about telling someone their high school. Now, very often roasts involve embarrassing things that might be embarrassing to the parents, to the kid himself or herself. So very often it's a problem. Even if it's a joke, if the person would be insulted or likely would be insulted, so then that's usur, that's forbidden. I would say, though, that sometimes, you know, people make jokes about, like, for example, when I joke with Netanel, like I'm in my drasha, right, this past Shabbos, I played around with Netanel. So we have a thing that that's something that clearly Netanel, you know, doesn't view as an insult. He got me back. I mean, you weren't here for it, but he got me back at lunch for some of the people at lunchtime. He got me back. We have fun things, you know, joking with each other. We don't cross the line. So again, you know, a joke that's not viewed as an insult and the person would not be hurt from it, and clearly the person would not be hurt from it, so that would not be a violation of Lashon Hara. But if the person would be hurt by it, Lashon Hara is not only if it's based on hatred, even by doing something that a person would feel bad that you know about the person's background or whatever the case is. Okay?
So, Rabbi, I don't know if there was another question, but I think that question, I know when I asked, you know, it was about kids, saying, are you allowed to talk about your kids' struggles in school?
Oh.
And are you allowed to tell slightly embarrassing stories about your child?
Oh, about your are you allowed to speak Lashon Hara? Are you allowed to talk about your kids?
But I'm talking about child.
Yeah. So what's the purpose about
like,
that?
Are you allowed to just say, oh, my daughter is having this issue in school? Like,
right.
You know, just talking about your children, even at all.
Right.
Isn't that kind of an issue?
I think we do it a lot, I guess. I don't know if like a 4 or 5 year old child, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't look into that so much, but I don't know if like a very young child, they don't know what that means, that like, you know, everyone speaks a little about their child, you know, a little thing here and there. I don't think that's viewed as insulting to the child.
You said it's not, even if it's not insulting.
No. I said even if you're not doing it based on hatred, it still could be Lashon Hara if it's insulting to the person. So I don't know if like saying something about a 2 or 3 or 5 year old where it's clearly not going to be, you know, if you say something and then kids over here and they make fun of the child, so then that would be a problem, right, potentially.
Right.
But I don't know if you're saying something about a 2 or 3 year old or 5 year old saying about their struggles. You know, I don't know if that's considered Lashon Hara, if it doesn't make a big deal, you know, for them or not. No, they don't really.
Like motivation play a part?
Yeah,
like
no, 100%. Yes.
Saying something to help your child. You're venting with a friend who has similar problems or asking for advice.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that.
To be more.
Yes. So I think if it's, I think if it's helpful, I think if it's helpful, if it's for chinuch reasons, you know, technically speaking, we don't do this nowadays. Even talk about hitting a child for the sake of, you know, for the sake of chinuch. Obviously, it's not, you know, there are more effective ways to educate children rather than hitting someone. But certainly, I think if maybe sometimes you may have to embarrass a child in order, as a form of education, as a form of chinuch, you know, like kids misbehave, a child's misbehaving, so you need to lay down the law, and the child may feel embarrassed based on what you're going to do, but if it's for the purpose of chinuch, then that should be permitted. Okay. Now, when should you tell another mother? Let's say you see a child is misbehaving, or let's say a child is misbehaving, or a child did something to your child. And when should we just let it go? Okay? So again, one of the rules for one of the conditions for Lashon Hara is that you have to clarify the facts are true and clarify what the person did was wrong. So let's assume that you clarified the facts and the child truly did something mean to our child and maybe another child. So I think this is a lo samod al dam reyecha issue, which is don't stand idly by the blood of your brother or your friend, which means that you are, supposed to try to help people. You know, if someone is if someone's being harmed, you should try to help the person. So I think it's really a calculation here. It's really a calculation if you believe that by saying something to the other parent will be effective, then you should say something. Because then lo samar adam reyacha, you're going, you know, and you're going to help the person. If you believe that saying something will not be effective, then you should devise another strategy to help protect your child from the other child. So I think this question really depends on whether you think it'll be effective or not, and that depends on the facts and circumstances. Okay, that's how I look at that question. Okay, number 8. What if you are hosting an event and you want to invite certain friends and not others, and certain acquaintances would feel excluded? So I don't think that you have to invite someone just because she will feel excluded if you don't invite her. You know, you only have limited resources, a limited budget. There might be other considerations. You simply can't invite everyone. So that's principle number 1. There's a second principle, though. I think we have a religious ethic about caring about the yasam and the almana, about the widow and the orphan, those people who are otherwise forgotten in the community, and make them feel a sense of belonging. And examples of this religious ethic include that, you know, I said, you know, setting aside on Purim a few extra mishloach manos for someone who, no one is giving them mishloach manos. Or maybe, what does the Rambam say? The Rambam says that anyone who just has his family for Yom Tov and doesn't invite the poor to eat the meal with him, that's not simchas shel mitzvah. That's not a happiness of a mitzvah. That's simchas kreso. That's the happiness of your stomach. So there is a religious ethic that is pervasive throughout halacha that we need to care about those who are otherwise forgotten in the community. So I think it would be nice. So I think there could be two different issues. There's one about someone who may be in a different friends group and you have limited people and they have other friends and some people are more sensitive. There are people who are more sensitive, people who are less sensitive. I don't think you're definitively obligated if you have certain considerations. You can only invite certain people, not other people. You try to be as sensitive as you can, but there are also certain limitations. At the same time, I'm more concerned, to be honest with you, not about the person who is overly sensitive, who may have another friend group. I'm more concerned about the people who are forgotten. And I think that everyone in the community should look around and say, you know what, at all of my events, I'm going to, let's say there are 10 people who are forgotten in the community. I don't know. So I'm going to make it my business that whenever I have any big event, I'm always going to invite one or two of those people. So again, I'm not for the person who like has other friends groups and they might be overly sensitive. Okay, what can you do? You're not. I don't think you're obligated, but I think we should look out, not for the people who you're afraid that they're going to be upset at you. I'm more concerned with the people who are going to feel forgotten. Okay. Okay. Question number 9. I always take off Purim, but not everyone does. What do you do when your standards may be assumed to apply to others, or other people's standards may be assumed to apply to you? I think if you're honest and you say that this holiday is very religiously meaningful to you to spend the day with your family and not convey that it's halachically forbidden for you to work on Purim, then you may do so. I've said before at some point that when I was an attorney, the two most difficult days for me, religious days, were Purim and Tisha B'Av, because those were days that, technically speaking, I was allowed to go to work, but I really did not want to go to work. Tisha B'Av, I wanted to spend at least until midday in Shul St. Kinos. And Purim, I wanted to spend the day with my family doing Mishloach Manos. And most of the years when I was an attorney, I was able, most of the days, to take off at least a good portion of those days. But I think we need to be honest. If someone makes an unreasonable inference about the religious standards of others based on your honesty, you are not held responsible. I found there's a halacha on the Shulchan Aruch. It's a little bit connected. In Choshe Mishpat, Simon Reish Chav Hei, Sivav, where the Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you're walking down the street and you meet up with someone. And that person says, oh my gosh, you came to see me. Thank you so much. And the person unreasonably assumed that you went to meet her. You do not need to correct her unreasonable, unwarranted assumption. Okay, that's not considered Geneva Stas. If someone makes an unreasonable, unwarranted assumption. So you just have to be honest. You take off Purim. This is religiously meaningful to you. You're not saying it's halachically forbidden, but it's very meaningful to you. I think nowadays in the secular world, you know, people only say it's, they don't know what it means, usur or mutter, it's forbidden, it's permitted. They also know that, you know, this is a very meaningful holiday for me, and I'd like to take it off as a religious holiday. And then either they'll say yes or no. I don't think you could say, if they ask you, is it absolutely forbidden to take off? Is it obviously forbidden to work? Can you pick up the phone? You're not allowed to lie. But anyway, that's how I would approach that question. Question number 10. My grandfather worked in the public school system, was often the only from Jew. One year he overheard a secular Jew saying that he needed days off for Chol HaMoed Shavuos. What? I've been looking for that holiday now for days. Where is that Chol HaMoed Shavuos? So was he supposed to inform the employer? So I would say the following. Telling the employer would be considered Lashon Hara for a constructive purpose. You are protecting the employer. Let's say the employer is Jewish. So there are a lot of theories as to why you would be obligated to tell the employer. Number one, some say that Lo Samra Dam Riacha applies even for protecting someone's property or someone's finances. So this person is inappropriately taking off day's work when he should be working for the employer. Or maybe Hashava Saveda, some say that could also be viewed as saving someone's property. Could also be Vahat Riacha Kamocha. So different theories as to telling the employer, if he's Jewish, about these things. It's also whether he's Jewish or not. It's a chil Hashem that someone's lying, using religion to lie and to beat the system. It's a tremendous chil Hashem. That being said, first of all, there's a practical consideration. You may not have to tell the employer if by doing so, let's say, then this person is going to make your life miserable and it will harm you more than it will cause you major problems. So then you might not have to do it in that instance. But let's say you can say it and there's no repercussions to you. So I would say you would be allowed to tell the employer that this employee is lying. However, one of the conditions of Lashon Hara is that you should try to avoid it if at all possible. So the first thing you should do is tell, if you can, if you feel comfortable, is to try to confront this secular Jew and say, you need to be honest. You're making us from Jews look bad. You're making us Jews look bad, that we're that we're liars and we're schemers. So before telling the boss that this person is lying, I would first try. I would first feel that I would need to confront this Jew and tell him that he needs to be honest. That's because before you spread lashon hara to someone else, you should try to confront the person who's doing the bad thing, and so that you can avoid the lashon hara. Okay, am I allowed to take the last spot in groups? To sign up if it means my friend won't get to send her kid. There's another question that we think is related to this. If there's an extra box in the free food that we get from the district, should I tell my group and split it amongst my carpool, or can I keep it all for myself? So I think you're permitted to take care of yourself and your family first. Let's say you find, I don't know, $1,000 on the street. You have to divvy it up with other people. No, you find something, you can get it first. If, let's say, there's a common custom, I don't know, that whenever it's a common custom with your group, that whenever someone realizes there's free food, they split up with everyone, so then there could be this principle of Asisa Yashavato. The Ramban has the line in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Ches. The Ramban says, when the Torah says, you should do what is Yashar Vato, you should do what is just and what is good in the eyes of Hashem. And the Ramban says that this is a big concept of doing what is correct. And he says, it's impossible, yefshar lahaskir b'torah kol hanhagos ha'adav im shcheina v'reyav v'kol ma'aso matano v'tikunei yishav dinos kulam. It's impossible for the Torah to describe each and every situation that's an interpersonal, that reflects interpersonal relationships with other people. The Torah can't describe every single situation. Okay, but aval achrei shehisker mehem harbe. However, after that, the Torah mentioned a number of examples like lo seilech racha ba'mecha, don't gossip, lo sikom v'lo sitor, don't take revenge, don't hold a grudge, lo tavan adam riecha, don't stand idly by the blood of your friend, lo sekal cheresh, don't curse a deaf mute person, b'nei seva takum, you should rise in front of an elderly person, v'chayotz v'heaven, similar to these commandments. Chazar lomar b'derech klal. The Torah then has this general language, which says what? Sheyase hatov vayasha b'chol davar. That you should do what is good and what is right with respect to everything. Ad sheikones b'zeh hapshara v'lifnim mishur asadin. Until, right? So that you should be someone who goes above and beyond. And he said that you should be someone where about the Gemara, and he quotes the Gemara in Yuma, daf peivav and aleph, who says that you should be someone about whom other people say, blessed is you, blessed is your father who taught you Torah, blessed is your Rebbe who taught you Torah, your mother taught you Torah, blessed is the Torah, that you should be someone who you're walking Kiddush Hashem. So I would say that if the common custom is that you split the food, so technically you might be able to keep it yourself, but it might be a violation of Sisa Yashavato. Question number 12. If there's a job opening and your friend really wants it and has told you that she wants it, can you apply for it too? So the truth is there might be an issue of applying for a job. That's called a yored letoch umna shel chavero. There are all these things about encroaching on someone's property or someone's job. So if your friend is poised to be hired, even in that instance, it actually might be permitted if you need the job and you cannot find a similar job elsewhere. It's not so clear. This is a very complicated topic, and I'm just giving sort of like a general overview. But the way the question was presented to me is, if she only applied for the job, she doesn't have rights to the job. Okay? There might be a question if they're about to hire her, and perhaps you have your own job and you can get a similar job, then there might be an issue. But if she's just applying for the job, there's no problem applying for the job when the friend is only, when it's at the stage of the application process. Another related question, what about stealing, cleaning, or babysitting help? Can I ask my friend's cleaning help if she could give me a few hours without consulting with my friend? There are situations where this happens and the cleaning or babysitting help will leave the original employer when this happens. So again, this again encroaching on someone else's employee. Are you allowed to lure another employee to work for you. So you are permitted to lure another employee to work for you if you cannot find other similarly suitable employees. This is from the Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Reish Lamed Zayin, Seif Aleph and Beis. But again, same issue as I would say to a question that was asked before. If there is a common custom of not doing so, if in Oceanside, I don't know the minhag in Oceanside. I don't know who establishes the minhag. But if the minhag in Oceanside is basically, you know, we don't do that. You know, everyone has their babysitting help, and we just don't, you know, we don't have this thing of trying to steal someone's babysitter. It's generally not done. And the question, how do you define when something is a custom? Not exactly clear. If it's generally not done, if you're, I don't say an overly sensitive person, if your average person in the community would say, you know what, we don't do this here in Oceanside, we don't, you know, if someone has babysitting help, we don't take the person away from you. If your average reasonable person would say that's not done in our community, then the principle of Asis Yashav Atov would apply, in which case you should not lure the employee to work for you. So it really depends on what's the general minhag in Oceanside when it comes to taking someone else's cleaning or babysitting help. If it's a free-for-all and everyone can just outbid the next person, and that's assumed when you move to the community, you need to understand you're going to try to outbid the next person for getting cleaning help or babysitting help, then that's fair game. But if it's something where once someone has a babysitter, then really it's not done to take someone else's babysitter, then it would likely be a violation of the Ramban's V'asisa Hayashar V'hatov. So those are the 13 questions that were asked to me. And again, hopefully we, you know, learned some principles of Jewish law and how to apply them in regular everyday circumstances. And hopefully by sensitizing ourselves to these values, hopefully we can increase the Beidam Lachavero midos that we should be working on between now and Shavuos, and then strengthen feelings of friendship and brotherhood, sisterhood, and camaraderie in our community. So that's my piece. If anyone has any questions,